Blog Talk Radio.
Transgenerational epigenetic trauma, a case for reparations. We'll be discussing that tonight. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you're on your computer, you can go to www.usliftingus.com, scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You'll be at the Blog Talk Radio site at that time. My name is Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Cam Howard, the National Male Co-Chair of NCOBRA. Peace, Brother Cam. How are you?
Peace, my sister. I am fabulous. How are you tonight?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. We're looking forward to tonight's conversation. So to begin, Brother Cam, please tell the family a little bit about yourself, about NCOBRA, and how you became interested in NCOBRA.
Sure. Well, you know, my name is Cam Howard. I'm in Chicago. I'm a Chicago native. Been here all my life, pretty much. I'm a businessman by profession, a real estate investor. Been doing that over 20 years or so, which allows me to do the reparations work that I do. Became interested in reparations about 30 years ago, 25 years ago, maybe about 25 years ago. Didn't know if I wanted to get into that movement or at the time I was looking at a reentry program or some type of health that our community has been facing, how I wanted to aid in our work in redemption and revitalizing our community. But about 16 years ago, I decided that reparations was the mother of all challenges that we face. I mean, we can get this right. We can deal with, have resources to deal with the economic injuries that we suffer, the psychological and emotional injuries that we suffer, the educational injuries that we suffer from. That, you know, this one, you know, this one, you know, if we didn't get this one, we'd be in pretty good shape for our future. And so I decided to join in COBRA. I didn't know that there was any other reparations organizations out there. The only thing I knew was in COBRA, and I'm glad I did on COBRA, because when I joined, I immediately became enamored by the type of commitment and excellence and knowledge of our African reality and the issue of being harmed by this country. There was a wealth of knowledge among the membership and leaders, and I knew that that was the place for me, and so it's been 16 years in the organization. I'm currently the National Male Co-Chair. Last weekend, I was elected to my third and final term, two-year term as National Co-Chair. I was, before being co-chair, I was co-chair of our Legislative Commission, which worked with, closely with Congressman John Conyers. I was in 2009 and worked with him up until he left Congress. And, of course, we're working with Congressman Michelle Jackson Lee today. Yeah, so that's really me and COBRA. COBRA is a mass-based organization. We've been around for 34 years, second to none when it comes to longevity, second to none when it comes to commitment. We never wavered. There have been many organizations that dealt with reparations, may not have been their platform, but when things were not so public, they faded, and COBRA continued. And a lot of the work that we were doing during that so-called downtime, when it was not public, reparations was not in the public domain, a lot of the work we did, we're benefiting from today. For instance, and we revised H.R. 40. We began that work in 2015, and now it is the major legislation in the federal level. The state of California patterned their legislation out of H.R. 40, which we wrote, led in writing. Washington, City of Washington, D.C., legislation is part of that, H.R. 40. State of New York, their House Assembly just passed a reparations bill. It's part of that, H.R. 40. So a lot of, and there's other work that we've been doing over the years that we're benefiting from now. And so we never waver in this fight. We are positioning our people to actually deliver, receive repair, and it's our job now to help push the needle forward so we can actually deliver that repair to our people.
Okay, thank you for sharing all of that. I know what in COBRA, what the letters are, and sometimes I can say, you know, say the name of the organization straight out, but will you please say what NCOBRA stands for?
Sure. It is the National Coalition of Black for Reparations. And we are a
Black
coalition.
Black Reparations what?
The National Coalition for Reparations in America.
Okay. Thank you for reminding me, because I had known that, but I couldn't get it straight this night. Okay, so what do you see that makes NCOBRA unique Was it the longevity or the fact that you do have bills that you write that actually get passed? What makes it unique to you?
Well, our commitment is the biggest thing that makes us unique as a body is that, again, we've never wavered. The depth mm-hmm. of knowledge, research that we've done over the years, you know, we mm-hmm. Benefiting from 34 years of detailed study and activism and struggle on this issue that, you know, we're not starting from a point where there's no historical foundation. We have that historical foundation, which the section, mm-hmm. again, from a lot of organizations who have just got into the space is that, you know, they have a lot of great ideas, but, you know, some of them have been vetted years ago and have been determined to be insufficient for the type of that's needed for us to really be healed, whole, and healthy in this country and repaired. And so, you know, and it's sort of the attempt in a lot of cases to reinvent the wheel. We have a solid foundation, the five basic areas of injury that we've laid out and been pushing for over 15 years. Still, those five basic injuries are the five basic injuries that are necessary today to be addressed. Cutting edge of all research. We're connected internationally, not only with reparations scholars in this country, but reparations scholars globally. We have a great position. I mean, there's so much that making COVID unique that I'd be a show in the other.
So tell me the five basic areas that you were speaking of. What are they?
So, yeah, Legal Strategies Commission, about 15 years ago, met, and they, you know, came up with the five minimum basic injury areas that any reparations must address, and that is the criminal punishment. Everyone knows that we're still affected by the criminal punishment system. The 13th Amendment allows them to have the enslavement of African people under another name.
Exactly.
Economic, which includes compensation, business development grants, et cetera. Education from preschool, all the way up into postgraduate, and not only the ability to enter into those spaces, particularly funding of HBCUs, but also the type of information that's being taught in even predominantly white universities, wherever our children are, make sure that the curriculum reflects us. But education, our peoplehood, which was damaged as we our culture, our sense of autonomy and sovereignty, that was damaged, that must be repaired. And then finally, health, which is the topic tonight.
Okay. Thank you for that clarity. So I understand that INCOBRA celebrated, was it the 32nd anniversary this past weekend or... Was it what do you feel was significant about this year's anniversary, other than it's your last year to be the male co-chair?
Well, I have two more years. I was voted in for two more years. What was significant? But more so than that was the sharing with our body and the collective understanding of our body of our position in the movement, that we have a church, our position in the movement. We have are impacting the movement not only on the federal level with HR 40, but like I said, in many states and cities, they're calling on INCOBRA to assist them in local reparations efforts. We are at the front of that. We dealt with internal reparations at the convention, and you know that's always been an issue. Some people say, "Why y'all fighting for, you know, the federal government? We got all these resources. We should be doing this and doing that." And they're right. Mm-hmm. We should be doing this. We should not fight against for the federal government as well. It's both and peace. And so we did deal with internal reparations. We have some dynamic youth reparational leaders that are in the pipeline that stepped up and demonstrated their commitment and their knowledge and their ability to comprehend the trusting dynamics within the movement, and that they're able to move forward from that understanding. So that was very, very important. Again, we laid out strategy along with Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee on what the masses must be doing. You know, reparations is not given. Reparations is not, we're not asking for it. Reparations is a demand. That means we must organize and push the political power to act in, in our favor. And that requires organization. It requires the masses, a collective, a competent and collective body moving forward in unison, and it requires proper strategy. And so that's what we try to deliver at the convention.
Okay. Thank you again for that. Tonight, Brother Cam, you are actually here to discuss transgenerational epigenetic trauma with the family. So please define transgenerational epigenetic trauma and tell us the origin of the term, please.
So to begin with, transgenerational epigenetic trauma or transgenerational epigenetic inheritance, you have to start with historical trauma. And historical trauma is a jolting or a monstrous event that happens to a group of people, not an individual, but a group of people. And it happens at for a particular period of time. And usually there's a start time and there's a stop time. And then after that period ended, if there's still remnants of that trauma, then it is said to be a historical trauma. I mean, it happened and people are still experiencing trauma as a fact. It is generational trauma if that trauma is passed down to the child. It is multi-generational trauma if it's passed down to the grandchild. And it's transgenerational transmission of trauma if it's passed down beyond those two generations to the third generation or the great-grandchild. Now, in our instance, so that's transgenerational transmission of trauma. But also as a result of historical trauma, you can have transgenerational epigenetic inheritance. So the historical trauma produces a mental state that mental disturbance emotionally, psychologically, mentally can be passed down. That's the trauma that's passed down. Or that historical trauma, what we know can affect the physical body, and particularly a part of the gene is called the epigenome. And the epigenome is that part of the gene that has like switches or tags on it, and it tells the gene to turn off, to turn on. If you're in a stressful situation, it may tell the gene to turn off because, you know, the body is stressed. It may supposed to tell the gene to cut off, but it may tell the gene to cut on based on historical trauma. And it may tell all the surrounding genes to cut on based on historical trauma. So your body is being affected negatively as a result of the historical trauma because your epigenome is acting erratically. And so that can happen in the individual who experienced the trauma or the group that experienced the trauma. And just like transgenerational transmission of trauma, it can either be generational, where the epigenome effect goes from the mother or father to the child, stops there. It can be multi-generational, where it goes from the parent to the child to the grandchild, or from the grandparent to the parent to the child. That's multi-generational. And epigenetic transgenerational epigenetic inheritance is when the transgenerational component is passed down more than those three generations. And so what we see today is that, first of all, the traditional definition of historical trauma doesn't apply to us, because as I stated, historical trauma is a jolting, traumatic, monstrous event that happens to a group of people and as a start and stop time. The Jewish Holocaust, historical trauma, lasted for 6 years. When you find people in wars, their trauma, that's historical trauma, but it happened during the period of the war. And when the war stopped, if the trauma still remains, you can say that they've been traumatized by that war, and if it goes to the children, et cetera, you have a multi-generational trend. With us, there's never been a period in our history where we have not been under jolting, monstrous, and traumatic periods and events. We had 246 years of enslavement. That was multi-generational. That was a multi-generation, 10, 11 generations in itself, experiencing ongoing and compounded trauma. After enslavement, we had 80-plus years of Jim Crow post-Reconstruction. Even during Reconstruction, there was still trauma, still traumatic events happening to us. Reconstruction, there was a long period, 85-plus years, of more trauma. And then post-Jim Crow, we know that in the 60s, you know, the term police abuse became popular. That was, you know, a form of trauma. We're still experiencing police terror today. It's now called police terror today, and mass incarceration also periods of and racial violence and attacks, also traumatic periods that we experience today. But there's never been a time when we have not been assaulted psychologically in a violent way in this country, so the traditional trauma model doesn't fit us. So what we're able to see as a result of new science, this whole science of looking at the gene, you know, uncovering the science around the gene, we're able to see that historical trauma actually affected us physically, and the physical damages to the trauma lead to premature death, premature aging, a host of all types of illnesses that result as a result of a weakening of the immune system. We know that transgenerational epigenetic inheritance weakens the immune system. We know that it can create, as I was saying earlier, it can create the immune system to attack the body. And that's called autoimmune diseases, where the body attacks itself. We know that those things also, we're able to measure those things scientifically as a result of this new science that's out. And so not only have we been affected mentally, emotionally, psychologically, which is the transgenerational transmission of trauma, but also physically at the genetic level, which is the transgenerational epigenetic inheritance or epigenetic injury that encodes us all in it.
Okay, that's quite a lot. We're going to come back and unpack some of that a little bit more. But right now I want to invite people to join the conversation. They can call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone to make a comment or to ask your question. You can go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, and then click on Listen Live if you'd rather listen to the conversation on your computer than on your phone. We're going to take a quick, let me see if I see anybody with their hand up. No, not yet. Okay, so we're going to take a very quick music break right now, Brother Cam, and we'll be right back.
Black music.
Okay, we're back to Dare to Win, the Thursday night program of Us Lifting Us. Tonight we're talking to Brother Cam Howard, who is the National Male Co-Chair of NCOBRA, and he's been sharing information with us about transgenerational epigenetic trauma. Brother Cam, you were saying about how it affects Black people's health, that the transgenerational epigenetic. Well, maybe I'm saying the wrong thing. What is it that you're saying? Because you're saying this particular term, apparently transgenerational epigenetic trauma, is not accurately described what Black people in America are going through because it has no end date. Is that correct? Am I understanding you correctly?
No, that's not quite what I'm saying. But let me okay. say this also. It's kind of confusing the terms too. So transgenerational epigenetic inheritance is the physical effect of historical trauma. Transgenerational okay. transmission of trauma is the emotional, mental, and psychological effect of historical trauma. So you can't have transgenerational epigenetic trauma because the epigenetic component looks at the physical effect, not the mental mm-hmm. effect. But the historical trauma produces both. It produces these long-term transgenerational mental, emotional, and spiritual
mm-hmm.
injuries, and it also create the potential for these physical deficiencies to develop later in life as well. So one is
okay.
emotional, mental, and the other one is physical.
Okay.
And so
they will not end
as long as there's continued trauma and no intervention. They're likely to continue and compound because the trauma is still continuing. We're still being aggressed against by police, by the system, by racist whites in this mm-hmm. country.
Okay.
All the time.
Okay, so let me see if I understand better. The trauma is ongoing. Is that's what yeah, I'm understanding, because we still are faced with all of these problems of being here. So
right.
we're actually tonight with, and the epigenetic part is the physical part that would lead to, say, bad health and all the other things that we experience on a physical level.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. So what is the better term then? Because epigenetic trauma then seems to be not accurate. Is that right? Because then it's saying this epigenetic is the physical thing, and then the trauma is the mental part. Do I understand you correctly
right.
there? Okay.
Right. So. Yeah, epigenetic trauma. So transgenerational
okay.
just both of them are transgenerational. It just means going across three generations, at least three generations. But
okay.
so transgenerational transmission of trauma, that's the mental and physical.
Uh-huh.
Epigenetic inheritance, that's the mental and emotional. Transgenerational epigenetic inheritance is the physical. So we suffer from both. Both
okay.
the emotional, mental legacy of historical trauma and the physical legacy of historical trauma.
Okay. So let me ask you, what do we see in ourselves that, what does it look like? Our behavior pattern as a result of the trauma that has
right.
been ongoing since we've been here.
So Dr. Joy DeGruy, as far as when we look at transgenerational transmission of trauma, Dr. Joy DeGruy mm-hmm. came up with post-traumatic slave syndrome, where, you know, it produces a situation where we're always angry because of the ever-present anger, that we're ready to snap at any minute. We're so stressed. We're already wound up. So the smallest thing where most people would just brush off, sometimes we'll act on it in a non-realistic manner according to the threat that we're posed with. So that's part of it, just feeling a emptiness, vacant esteem is what she calls some of the characteristics of post-traumatic slave syndrome. There's one brother out of Chicago who first introduced me to the term transgeneration of genetic inheritance, of a doctor, Dr. Kenneth Nave. He believes that a lot of the violence being contributed by our young brothers is a result of this historical trauma, compounded and compounded and compounded. Again, Dr. Jordan Lilly says there's a theme there, you know, with it. And so these young brothers who have no sense of self-worth or hopeless, et cetera, and Dr. Amos Wilson talks about the amnesia, when a person is amnesic, meaning they have no knowledge of their history, they also have a preoccupation with death. And so when we see a combination of young brothers with no knowledge of who they are, as well as this compounded trauma and their ongoing trauma, seeing their friends murdered, my grandson who's 21, overdosed with some pills a few months ago because one of his friends, like, died because one of his friends, best friends, was murdered. And so we see this compounded trauma and the violence, the self-destructive behavior that a lot of our youth are exhibiting is a direct result of this compounded trauma, the compounded trauma. So that's one way we're seeing it. We're seeing it physically, the epigenetic component, with the high levels of obesity, the high levels of heart and damage, heart injury in our community, high level of hypertension, the diets that we eat, et cetera. You know, we are ill as a people. We're not in a healthy state as a people. Mm-hmm. Over 60% of our women are obese. 50+% of our men are obese. 40% have hypertension collectively. We have some of the highest rates in this country on heart attacks, highest rates in this country on lung disease. You know, we are not healthy as a people in this country. About 15 years ago, we came up with the term juvenile diabetes. That had never existed before. We had the highest rate of juvenile diabetes in the country. You look in our community, there's all of these dialysis centers, and it reveals the fact that we're not healthy. And so we're saying that the reason we're not healthy is because of the damage to our epigenome as a result of the historical trauma, discrimination, racism, violence, et cetera, that we've had to endure for centuries. And we're not just saying it, the science is saying it, and that's really what's important is that on COBRA is we engaged in attempting to get this research done that we can begin to bring the science to our people and to those professionals who are in a position to counter with public policy these issues that we are facing and will continue to face unless they're addressed.
Thank you for that. We have a couple of callers on the line, so I'm going to open the and take questions or let them make their comments. Peace. Last four digits, 3176. Please state your name, where you're calling from, and ask your question or make your comment.
Greetings, Sister Q and Brother Cam. This is Brother Auntie calling from Atlanta. Enjoying
Peace,
the program
Brother
tonight. This is a subject that I just wasn't fully aware of. And like you, Sister Q, I'm trying to get some clarity. So I have two questions. The first one is this is because of the trauma of our Ma'afa, it has infected us genetically, or it is causing our DNA to express differently, resulting in things like the brother was saying, juvenile diabetes and these kinds of changes. So my first question is this a change? When I look at the definitions of epigenetics, it says that it's a change in the way the genetic material expresses or doesn't express, but it does not necessarily represent a change in the DNA itself. So I'm trying to get clarity on that. And then secondly, can these transgenerational epigenetic changes be reversed? For example, if we change our diet and get off of the foods that are making us sick, the excessive animal protein, et cetera, can we reverse the epigenetic expression that we're seeing in our community? And I'll listen offline for your response, and thank you very much for the topic.
Thank you, Brother.
Thank you,
Brother.
Sure, and greetings to you also, Brother. Those are two great questions. So the first one that was, it does not change our DNA. It changes, as you stated, you use the correct word, the expression of our DNA. And that propensity to change how particular genes are cut on, when we talk about expression, we talk about cutting on and cutting off. Certain parts of our gene cut on and cut off. The gene is still the same, but things that are supposed to act and cause the gene to respond to environmental stimuli doesn't happen in the way it should. And so epigenetics is really about how does the environment have, what effect does the environment have on your genes? That's what epigenetics is about. What effect does the environment have on your genes? And so what we're seeing is that a traumatic environment, even a poor, impoverished environment, can affect the expression of the gene, as the word my brother used. Whether the gene cuts off or on when it's supposed to, does it stay on after, you know, it cuts on when it's supposed to, but it stays on, it doesn't cut off. Or it's supposed to cut on and it cut off and it doesn't cut on. Or it's on all the time, even when it's, you know, when there's no threat to the body. And so that's epigenetics. How does the environment affect the expression of the gene? And we know that once the gene, that switch has been altered, modified, genetically modified, if you will, then that effect can be passed down generationally, where the child's gene responds in the same way to environmental stimuli, even though they hadn't experienced the stimuli that their parents experienced, and it still expresses the same way. So that's epigenetics. The second question is, can it be reversed? Yes, it can. I mean, we don't have the human study that we need because it's a new science, but there are quite a bit of animal studies. We know that, like you said, diet, we have a high-fat diet. They fed mice high-fat diets, saw that it was, you know, the propensity of obesity was passed down 3-4 generations, and once they took the mice off of the diet, there was no more transmission. We saw where vitamin B plus, B complex vitamins were introduced into mice that had that were purposely given chemicals that would change their epigenome. And we saw that the vitamin therapy, the supplement therapy in mice reversed it. You can either neutralize the effect, meaning just stop it. It's been damaged, and just stop it from there. There's no more damage. You can minimize it, meaning that you slow it down, or you can reverse it. We're seeing that certain therapies can do one, two, or all three. We just don't have enough study and human, you know, trials to be able to be absolutely certain of the best protocol. So we know diet, we know exercise, we know health protocols like meditation, sleep, those type of things, engaging in group activities, purposeful action, those type of things we know that are having in mice and in some human trials have an ability to positively affect the previously damaged epigenome.
So it sounds like we could actually make these changes in our lifestyle behaviors on our own and let the science catch up with us, because we kind of know what we need to do. And if it doesn't help, it can't hurt. So we could start there.
Right.
I have another caller for you, so hold on a minute. So we'll get this this call going. Oh, boy. Okay. Caller from last four digits, 7244. Please state your name, where you're calling from, ask your question, or make your comment. Thank you.
Peace and power. This is Equine from calling from Columbia, South Carolina.
And, say your name again, please.
Equine.
Equally. Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for calling.
This is a great conversation. It's definitely a great discussion. It's a discussion that now is becoming more popular. Even when we're looking at how we get to the place of discussing reparations, some black folk are for it, some black folk are not. One thing I can say that even in my studies and from what I've gathered in my years of looking into where we went wrong and where we went right, when we've had the absence of our own African spirituality, knowing how to define ourselves with our divinity, knowing how to properly define our connection with nature, a lot of times, even in the now, we don't really get to see that. You know, even if you take all white people off the face of the earth and, you know, you give us reparations, you know, we still are stuck with a mechanism that is geared and wired by the European. You understand? So we have to look at the way we solve our problems, the way we view the world, our worldview. And that has been and is very important. And you know, that brings me to the place like where even if we are at a place where we're getting reparations, because, you know, everybody's talking about these PPP loans and, you know, all the money that the government was throwing around. But a lot of times are we finding our people are spending more money? Are they actually stimulating the economy? Or were our people actually investing in businesses? Were we actually saving our money? Were we actually, you understand? So I think therein lies, you know, it segue into my question. Even if we are getting reparations, even if we, you know, the European is saying, well, hey, and that's a perfect argument. I hear everything you're saying, and I'm all for it. But my thing is that is this not the same European that has been fighting us dirty the whole time? So if at any time we are allotted this type of advance, should we be leery? Should we be having our antennas out? Should we be looking for something to happen, or should we be able to enjoy what this European is going to give us? And, you know, how do you think that will play out?
Thank you for that question, Brother Cam.
So, first of all, peace and power back to you, brother.
Yes, sir.
And man, that's a deep question. I just finished writing a piece, actually yesterday, that looked at, and the title of it was Reparations and the Assault on the African Identity, which talked just, I mean, you could have wrote the piece yourself, that's the fact, you know, the damage to us as a collective and how that will, you know, really determine what we do or not do with the money if it's in the form of cash that comes to our community. Absent a collective historical consciousness, we would give all the money back to the cash back to those who have oppressed us. When it comes to what we would expect, we have to be vigilant always in this country because even though we're at the precipice of getting reparations and reparative resources, there's still an element in this nation that is totally against black life, black bodies, black mind, black culture, you know, and so we can't think that one segment, because one segment of the country, of the government, see our need bigger than these resources that we're getting, that they need us more than, you know, denying us reparations. I mean, they're going to give us reparations because they need us, that particular segment of the country. I have to also know that there's another segment that as soon as we get something, they're going to be angered, more angered, and they're going to rise up. So we have to be vigilant. We have to factor that in. But at the same time, we know that these resources are owed to us and they're needed, and that if we can get enough people seeing ourselves in the same fashion, that there's good cohesion, we'll do the right thing with the resources.
Thank you, Brother Cam, for your answer. So now I wanted to ask you, how do you see what we, all that you've spoken on this evening, and I know I'm going to get the words wrong, but you know what I mean, the transgenerational epigenetic heritage, I think you said, and then the transgenerational trauma, those two computers, how does that strengthen the case for reparations? I mean,
well,
when you're asking for reparations, you can identify the trauma and
definitely
all of that. Say that again.
I'm sorry, I thought you were finished. I was talking over you. I'm sorry.
No, you weren't. You could.
Okay. So it strengthens the argument greatly. In fact, as I stated, Dr. Kenneth Nave shared this information with me first almost 10 years ago. And the reason for that he was studying it was because he wanted to counter the argument by Judge Norgo in the 2005 lawsuit, where he said that we were too far removed to bring a lawsuit. We weren't the ones who were actually injured. We weren't the ones who were enslaved. We weren't the ones who went to Jim Crow. They didn't even say Jim Crow, but we weren't the ones who were enslaved because the lawsuit was for these corporations that benefited during enslavement. And say, well, you all are too far removed from the injury, from the action, to bring a lawsuit. Well, transgeneration epigenetic inheritance and transgenerational trauma says that we're not removed. We're living, feeling, breathing, expressing the harms that happened 3 centuries ago, 4 centuries ago, a century ago, 50 years ago, even though we're only, you know, 20 years old or 15 years old. We're experiencing all of that history today. And so that's monumental to the issue of who's been injured and whether or not that injury is present. The injury is present. I always try to say that we do not wear the scars of enslavement on our back. We wear it on our DNA. And if you go up in the microscope, you can see the effects of those whips. You can see the effects of those, of viewing the lynching. You can see the effects of the rape of our women on our DNA today. And so it's a major piece in the argument for why we deserve reparations.
Okay. We have another caller. So I'm going to open the line. Peace. Caller with the digits 3440. State your name, where you're calling from, and ask your question or make your comment.
Greetings, Sister Q, and greeting to you, Brother Cam. This is Brother Shabaka. I'm calling from Baltimore, Maryland, and I'm really impacted by the conversation tonight. I don't have very much to contribute because, Sister Q, you basically asked the question. Although I think that, you know, the conversation that Cam had, you know, throughout this 1 hour sort of leads to the fact that we've been injured, and now we have almost scientific fact of the injury, which is continuous. And so, a case can be made of the continuation of the injury. So thank you very much, Sister Q, for asking that question. Cam, it's good listening to you. I think you're doing a very good job and very educational for many of us who are listening. That's all I want to say, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Brother Shabaka.
Thank you.
Okay. I thought I saw someone else with the okay, I think I have another call for you too, Brother Cam. Okay, caller with the last four digits 5663, please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment or ask your question. Thank you.
Greetings, everyone. This is Navantu Akawanda calling from Decatur, Georgia. I just want to thank Brother Howard for the work that he's doing. And this topic is quite inspiring and interesting. And it leads me to wonder about how continental Africans whose families were taken away from them, if that should be in their DNA as well. Is that true, Brother King?
So the question was the trauma that
continental Africans went through when their families were taken away from them and brought over here.
Yes, exactly. And greetings, Sister Mbantu. Exactly. So the trauma didn't start here on these shores. It started at the attack on the villages, as you stated. It started at the kidnapping. Started at the trek to the ocean. It then continued in the Middle Passage. All of these were historical traumatic periods in our lives, as well as our ancestors' lives, as well as the ancestors of continental Africans living today. So, and then they went through colonialism as well. So I was on the continent a couple of weeks ago, and the country that I was in, Guinea-Bissau, a poor country, but the life expectancy is like 52, 53 years old. Is that just because of the poor conditions, or is it also because of historical trauma, the effects on them, colonialism, you know, the death of their ancestors, et cetera? And so, you know, yeah, the effects of the transatlantic slave trade is global for African people.
Yeah. I just want to add, there's a new book called Franchise that talks about what McDonald's did to our people right after the 60s, you know, revolutionary kinds of movements that he had and what effect it has had on us through the franchises and what it's done to our people health-wise and also emotionally-wise and in the entrepreneurial part. And then there's a third thing I want to say, because I know time is limited. There's a brother who has come up with a laser vortex messenger that you can change the mode of the person. You know, you can remove some of that trauma through these devices. It's a magnetic therapy that you can use using your phone. It's being used by a lot of naturopath doctors, particularly black, recently. I just wanted to share that. So, again, Franchise is a book to look into, and this pulse magnetic therapy that's supposed to help black people with their trouble.
Thank you for sharing that, sis. Brother Cam, are you still there?
I am. Thank you, Sister.
All right. So we are almost to the end of the program, Brother Cam. So what is it that you would like to make sure that the family takes away from tonight's conversation?
That we're walking around, all of us are walking around, literally we're taking time bombs as a result of the atrocities that have been committed and those that are still being committed. But there's some things that we can do and that we have to seek to find this information and then act on this information, because what we're doing is passing down, we're passing down damaged DNA to our children, and when we should be passing down healthy DNA so they would have a greater life to be able to not only defend off oppression, but to create type of societies where there is no oppression of African people. And so we want to give them and ourselves, we want to make our lives better, have the best possible lives that we have. One of the biggest differences among blacks here in America who have means is that they don't get sick lesser than blacks in the city that, in this country that don't have means. They're just able to address the illness better. And so they'll live longer, the illnesses, but they still have the illnesses. And so, a lot of that we see is because of the trauma that we've experienced. And we just haven't been taught that, you know, these things are affecting us and that we can do something about it.
Okay. Thank you for that. Thank you very much for tonight's discussion, Brother Cam. And I want to thank everyone who joined us for this evening's program. We'll be back next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Peace. Too much school fears in other players. People have to start heal of one another. This is more than a new dance. This is communication. Unity within the community. Listen to Maccabee. Hey, you ready? Hey, hey. And I know nothing for the greetings. And I know nothing for the hi. And I know nothing for we heal one another. Anytime you're passing by, got this one you need to heal up. Heal up, you heal one another. Me say heal up. Heal up your sister, your brother. Me say heal up. Heal up, you heal one another. Me say heal, you heal, you heal, heal, you heal, you heal, heal up. Heal up, you heal one another. Me say heal up. Heal up your sister, your brother. Me say heal up. Heal up, you heal one another. Me say heal, you heal, you heal, heal, you heal, you heal. Brand new style, brand new pattern for all of the women and all of the man. We are going to the heal up in the dance hall session. But first we have to heal up the Almighty One. So stretch your two hands up in the air. Bring them together like you're saying a prayer. Take your hands and put them on your heart. Back to the prayer so the heal up start. Then you turn to your left or you turn to your right. Anywhere you want on, anywhere you like. Greet someone, ask them if them alright. Holy for loving at the dance hall tonight then. A little twist, a little twist. A little twist, then you do it like this. Touch fist if you want, touch fist, then you shake on if you want, shake on, then high five if you want the high five, then lion for me, say lion, lion, it's a the heal up, you heal one another, me say heal up your sister, your brother, me say heal up, you heal one another, me say heal, you heal, you heal, heal, you heal, you heal, heal up, you heal one another, me say heal up your sister, your brother, me say heal up, you heal one another, me say heal, you heal, you heal, heal, you heal. Smile a while, let me see your teeth. When you see your brethren, them on the street. Smile a while, let me see your gum. Let me see your gum, cause your sister in a gum. Me say, smile a while, let me me see you smile. Heal up the babies and the young child. Smile a while, no bother go and call. Come make we heal up the young and the whole. I the heal up, you heal one another. Me say heal up your sister, your brother. Me say heal up, you heal one another. Me say heal, you heal, you heal, heal, you heal, you heal, heal up. Heal up, you heal one another. Me say heal up your sister, your brother. Me say heal up, you heal one another. Me say heal, you heal, you heal, heal, you heal, you heal. Span the road when you watch hard. Then I know nothing for you heal up. Even a little nod, it makes you feel sad. When you heal up somebody and they look on you like, so you might hold them, head them straight. Me say them to you and them to you, them the people that me can't tolerate. Them a test for your faith. But we still a communicate. This a one and name, they heal up, you heal one another. Me say heal up your sister, your brother. Me say heal up, you heal one another. Me say heal, you heal, you heal, heal, you heal, you heal, heal up. Heal up, you heal one another. Me say heal up your sister, your brother. Me say heal up, you heal one another. Me say heal, you heal, you heal, heal, you heal, you heal, heal up. Who you never heal up before? Me say heal up, nobody ignore. Me say heal up, the people them pandy. That floor. Come and make way to the heel up once more. Just stretch your two hands up in the heel. Bring them together like you're saying a prayer. Take your hands and put them on your heart. Bang to the prayer so the heel up start. Then you turn to your left or you turn to your right. Anywhere you want on, anywhere you like. Greet someone, ask them if them are right. A whole heap of loving at the dance all tonight. Then a little twist, a little twist, a little twist, then you do it like this. A little twist, a little twist, a little twist, then you do it like this. And you touch fist if you want touch fist, and you shake on if you want shake on.